The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gillen.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the program Afternoons with Mike, right here on the Shepherd Radio Network. As my guest today, I'm very excited to have Rosine Johnson. She's the executive director for the Pace Center for Girls. And Rosine hails originally from Indiana.
Yes.
You're a Hoosier.
Yes, I am.
One who grew up in Michigan.
Yes.
But you, like I, born in the great state of Indiana.
Yes, original Hoosier.
Well, I tell you what, we got to stick together. It's funny. You know, people from Indiana do have that bond, and it is great. But you've been down here now for a while. You're the executive director of this wonderful, it's actually an outreach for women. It's a nonprofit. And I know you've got experience with nonprofits before coming here. Even.
Yes.
But it's great to have you here.
Thank
and
you.
You're part of a local church in the area called
Dream Life Center.
Dream Life Center.
Yes.
That's great. We want to hear about that too.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about your background. You grew up there in Michigan from the time, I think you said, about 10 or so?
Correct.
So were your folks believers up there?
So first of all, thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here. I'm very excited to be able to share about what I'm currently doing, but also just about me. So I actually was born again in Indiana, really raised about half of my childhood, if you will, in Gary, Indiana. So still have a lot of family there. And yes, I am the biggest Michael Jackson fan ever. around the age of 10. We moved to Michigan. My dad got a new job at GM at that time and then later ended up working for Ford in Michigan. And so that was around kind of the mid to late 80s, early 90s when, you know, just a lot of different things were happening in the auto industry, kind of similar to what just happened at the start of the millennium. So thankfully, you know, we were able to do that. And I grew up. My teenage years were really spent in Michigan. And so my family, my parents were believers, but we weren't churchgoers. So I grew up in a household that you knew about God. And we had this like coffee table Bible, you know, the big, big Bible that you can't take anywhere because it only fits and it can only stay on this coffee table because it's so heavy. So I remember even as a little kid, my mom always told me, she said, you always like to read. And so I would actually try to read the Bible. The coffee table. So imagine a 3-year-old trying to read this big, huge coffee table Bible. And that's what she told me. She said, you were always just fascinated about reading and you would read anything that was in front of you. So
especially if you were actually reading at age 3. Now that would be a miracle.
right. I do remember, you know, who can say, but I did spend some time trying to read that Bible.
You just made all homeschool moms feel a little jittery right there.
Hey, you put it out there. You never know. You don't know what they're picking up, but so that's really how we started. Again, I knew of the Lord. I knew of God. But we weren't churchgoers. We weren't very, and I don't even want to use the word religious because I'm not religious now. I think that I know for myself, I didn't truly understand salvation. I didn't truly understand what being a Christian was.
Right.
I just knew about it or I heard it. You know, we went to church. I can count on my finger, you know, on one hand, the number of times we went to church and they were mostly for funerals.
Yeah, the old thing of Christmas and Easter, funeral
purpose.
We didn't
even do that.
Only.
It was just funerals.
Yep. Just funerals.
Just funerals, yep.
So where along your lifeline did a real relationship with the Lord develop?
Sure. I think there were two pivotal moments for me. One was in high school. I had a great friend who's still a great dear friend to this day. She attended a youth church. And she was very adamant and very passionate about her church at the time. And you know, there were just certain things that she just would not do. But she was the coolest, most popular girl in school. She ended up being homecoming queen. She was drum major. And she just, there were just certain morals that she lived by that I always really looked up to. So I remember I asked her, you know, could I come with you to your youth church? I didn't really vibe with it at the time. I didn't really get into it.
So it was like a youth ministry?
Yeah, it was a youth ministry. Mm-hmm. So I can't say that I was like, ooh, sold. Like, I'm going to this all the time. I was like, I kind of don't want to do this. But I was searching. And I think she opened it up for me to see that as a Christian, especially even as a young Christian, as a teenager, you could still be a Christian and have fun and live life and enjoy. And being able to, the morals that you have, the righteousness is there to protect you and not hinder you. Mm-hmm. So I really began looking back. I saw that in her. But it wasn't until I actually went to college at Michigan State. So I started off as a Hoosier, but I am a Spartan. I have to make that very clear. Spartan
you're not,
now.
You're not an IU fan any longer then.
No, sir. Even though ironically, I literally grew up from IU around the corner. I remember as a kid, but no, total Spartan. I root for IU though whenever they play Michigan, because anybody but Michigan,
that's right.
Right. Anybody but the Wolverines. Okay.
Yes.
So, but long story short, it was when I was in college that my friends and I, we heard about this church, and they said, hey, there's this church that's happening in this hotel and everyone's going and it's really cool and it's fun. We should go. So I said, well, why not? I mean, what are we doing on a Sunday morning other than sleeping in? So my dorm room was across the street from the hotel that the church was meeting in, and on the campus of Michigan State University. So the church was meeting on campus, so it made it really convenient for teenagers. So I remember walking across and expecting to have a similar experience as I had before, you know, a very traditional type of service. So I walked in and I saw nothing but young people. The music was just so lively and current, thinking, can they play that in church? But it was so relevant.
Mm-hmm.
It was so relevant. And I remember when the pastor got up, I'd never heard anyone share the word in a way that I can understand it. The first time in my life where someone really broke down the Bible and broke down the word of God in a hour lesson where I understood it. And I knew that this was where I was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the service, I mean, the room was packed. There were a good 500 plus people in this small little ballroom. The room was packed. And at the end of the service, the pastor, he did the altar call. And he did the altar call. And I lifted my head up and there was an usher to the right of me leading me out toward the front of the altar. I didn't even feel my hand go up.
And all of this is in a hotel. Right?
All of this is in a hotel room. Yeah. I didn't even feel my hand go up. I just knew at that point, I knew that God was there and that the Holy Spirit was present. And so I remember walking to the front of that altar and I was just in tears, and the pastor stopped, who's still my pastor to this day. He stopped and he looked at me and he said, look up at me. And I looked up at him and he said, I want you to know this is the best decision you could have ever made in your life.
Yeah.
And boy, was he right. And
the angels
so,
rejoicing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And so I got saved that day and I've never looked back. That was, I gave my life to the Lord in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a fall day, October in 1996. I'll never forget that. And it was, again, the best decision I ever made. And so I then got, I joined that church. So the first church that I ever joined was that one. Stayed in tune and started helping everywhere. Mm-hmm. So I was a greeter. I was helping with the book and tape ministry. I started helping with so many just different things. And that was when I found my passion for working with young people, because I remember I applied to join the children's ministry and they said, I think you might do better in the youth ministry. And of course, a college student, I did it and I never looked back.
Mm-hmm. So it was really something that was in your heart to do. Some of these things, when you look back, it is so amazing to even see those moments, like that young lady's impact on your life. It mm-hmm. was before you really came to that conclusion and
absolutely.
Yeah, this is what I want to do. But I tell you, that gives you a great image and a great model before you about one's impact. And this young lady, it sounds so great that she was able to have her morals, have her faith, have her belief in God, and yet that just goes to show that that doesn't make you kind of awkward in front of people, because she wasn't that way.
Not at all. I mean, again, the most popular girl in school. Everyone knew her. She is now a physician in Atlanta. She went to her dream school, Emory University. I mean, I remember praying that she would get in. But no, absolutely. It was the exact opposite. And I never saw that. It was always, like you said, the awkward person, or this young lady, she wears dresses all the time because that's her religion and those types of things, versus you're a really typical, normal person. You are a normal person. You have access to someone greater, of course, and you have morals that are, again, the righteousness is what's protecting you. It's not diminishing your life. Mm-hmm. It's helping your life be better. And I really saw that within her. And being then able to go into this church, it was never my passion or dream to work with children. It was the exact opposite. My mom worked with children as a child. And so my mom had her own, daycare program. So I was surrounded by kids all the time. The last thing I wanted to do was be with kids. I mean, they were always at our house.
Right.
I'm like, when can I have my own mom back? My mom was an entrepreneur very young. So she started, she had her own beauty shop and beauty and hair salon. And then after she no longer wanted to do that, she then moved into childcare.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I remember, you know, always having to be the one to help. Oh, we need you to go get the glue sticks because we're doing this or what have you. So the last thing on earth I wanted to do was go work with kids. And it really happened. I won't forget this conversation either. There are moments. At the time I was in college. I had just given my life to the Lord, and I was really searching for purpose. And that was a big deal for me. You know, God, what is my purpose? Why am I here? What is my destiny? What am I really supposed to be doing? I thought it was broadcasting. I was on the way to be the next Oprah. I had my plan. I was going to Syracuse. I was doing 2 years in Michigan State, finishing up at Syracuse, going into the broadcasting program, joining a New York-based affiliate. I had a whole plan.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I was 30, I was going to be on a major network, a major anchor. I mean, I was ready. And that all stopped one day. I was working at the student bookstore at Michigan State University, and I was talking to a group of friends, and they were asking me, so what do you really want to do with your life? And I rattled off all of this, all of that, everything mm-hmm. that I just told you. And then just out of nowhere, it said, and I want to start a youth shelter for teens.
Wait a minute. Did I just say that?
Did I just say that? Did I just say that I wanted to? And so it rattled me because I had never mentioned that ever before. And that was before even working in youth ministry, working with teenagers. Because I was vehemently, you do not understand how opposed I was. I loved kids, but I didn't want my life to be consumed because it was already consumed as a young person with my mom.
Had you even thought about it before?
No.
So that was just like a random rogue thought.
Random, literally in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of SBS, the student bookstore, on a Saturday, game day, we're chit-chatting along because the game is happening and no one's in the store. And I don't know where that came from, but I didn't let it go. So what ended up happening, long story short, is that I actually started researching. I started researching what that would mean. What degree do you need to have to work with kids? Because at this point, I was in the Michigan State School of Journalism. I was a journalism major. I had already had 2 years in. I was just getting ready to now go into my junior year, really making some serious decisions as to whether or not I was doing video, audio, all of that. So mm-hmm. I'm all the way knee deep into broadcasting and journalism classes and everything. And I remember looking into it and come to find out Michigan State had one of the best education programs in the country. So I changed my major mid-year. I went to my advisor and I said, I think this is what I'm supposed to do. And he looked at me crazy and said, you do realize that you've just added 2 years to your program. And I said, actually, I haven't, because I'm graduating on time. So.
And what did he say to that?
He said, we'll see about that. But I was, I think I was definitely a Spitfire back then. So I still have a little bit of it in me, but definitely back then it was, no, you're going to figure it out.
And the reason for that is so often the credits that you had accumulated were not going to be passed on to the new major.
Exactly. But he found a way, which he did. And I graduated on time. Mid-year, wonderful. I switched. He created basically where I had two minors, so all of my credits would match, and then I would just need to catch up with my youth development courses. So long story short, changed my major. All of a sudden, I'm in the College of Human Ecology learning child and youth development. So my first degree is in youth development. My second degree is in child development and nonprofit administration. And I haven't looked back. I let all of it go. I shared with you before, I was working for the State Journal. I was in radio. I was working in TV. I let it all go and followed the path of purpose that God had for me.
Now, when you let it go like that, I think that in itself is a good thing to hear for people who maybe have some regrets over something where they were. And it's not necessarily a mistake that they made, but so often it is easier to second guess yourself. It's very easy to do, to start wondering now, did I do the right thing? Should I have made that career change? But in your mind, in your heart, you made the right call and you're not going to look back. You're not going to question that.
No, because I know what I heard.
That's so important.
I knew that was God. And obviously, and we know the scripture says that he will speak to us, but he'll confirm it with signs and wonders. There have been too many confirmations, whether those be prophecies, whether those be encouragements, whether those be the positions that I've had that have let me know, nope, you're right exactly where you're supposed mm-hmm. to be. So, no, it's fun that now I can see how that knowledge helps me in my role. For instance, you know, we had a great conversation about being in radio, but in the roles that I've had as leading programs, there's so much in terms of marketing and video and audio and creating products. And especially now in this digital age, all of that information, it's not lost. It's just used for something else.
It's used differently. And it does. You're right. For years, I did all of this and thinking that that's all that I was ever going to do. And then the Lord called me into ministry.
Awesome.
And I had to do the same thing you did. I had to just put my hand on that plow and not look back, but yet was able to use all of the skills and the the experience that God had given me in the ministry for the churches that I served.
Yes, so, that's awesome.
And now I've come full circle. I've come after 36 years of full-time ministry, I'm back in radio again.
Wow.
And it's just nuts. So you never know what's ahead for you.
So you're saying I really could still become the next Oprah. Let's see. Yeah. Let's see.
Now,
we'll see.
We'll see if that happens. Oh my goodness. Rosine Johnson from the PACE Center for Girls. She's my guest today. We're going to be back with her in a moment and learn about PACE, find out about this outreach and how that all of this comes together in Central Florida. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike. My guest in the studio today is Rosine Johnson. She's the executive director for the PACE Center for Girls. She grew up in Michigan. She's a Spartan, a Big Ten person here. You know, that rivalry between the two Michigans, Michigan State and Michigan, that is quite a matchup every year when they play each other in football. It runs deep.
It runs very deep.
That's a good way to say it.
Yes.
Yeah, rivalry week is always fun in sports, but I know that is one matchup that, my goodness.
That's a lot. And I'm glad we won last week. Go Green!
Yeah, that's it. Go Green. Scott Skiles played for Michigan State in basketball, and he became a big mover in the early years of the Orlando Magic. And so,
oh, wow, that's awesome.
But his hustle and all of that was, you know, for anybody that doesn't know about Big Ten, it's pretty big up there.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of Michigan kind of in Orlando with the DeVosses and all of that. Mm-hmm. Because so that I did not know about Scott and the Magic as well. So that's awesome.
So tell us a little bit about this now, this new life that kind of came to you and almost a, you're telling somebody and out of your mouth flows the words. And one day I want to do this. And that had nothing to do with anything that you had ever thought of doing before. But it must have been a Holy Spirit guided moment because something not only came out of your mouth, but it was put in your heart.
Absolutely. And so what's so funny about that moment now reflecting, I'm actually doing what I said. That was in 1997, maybe 1998. So fast forward 23 years, I'm actually doing what I said I would do, which is I would be working in a program helping teens. Mm-hmm. And so that's, you know what, God, you're just so smart. That's amazing. And that's a really great example of how he really orders the steps of the righteous. Sometimes we may not know where we're headed, but if we know that our steps are ordered, it'll all make sense. So,
well, tell us about PACE.
Absolutely. So PACE is a very, very special place to me. And it's a very special place to the girls that we serve. And so PACE Center for Girls actually started in Jacksonville, Florida in 1985. It has now grown from one center and 10 girls in Jacksonville, Florida to serving over 40,000 girls throughout the state of Florida and now and beyond.
Hmm.
The Orange County Center that I lead was the third center that was ever created. So we actually have very deep roots in Orlando, being here over 30 years. And what makes PACE so special is that it really is a place for girls where they can learn, heal, and grow.
Mm-hmm.
Our girls are beautiful inside and out. These are young ladies, though, that are struggling with unresolved trauma. And the trauma comes in many different forms. On the outside, it looks like a young lady that may be acting out in school, very truant, not attending classes, poor grades, failing classes. On the inside, though, there's a reason for that. That's the symptom,
mm-hmm.
right? The root of what's happening is that this young lady has usually been a victim or dealing with chronic homelessness. This young lady is dealing in a family environment that is just not positive or safe, where mm-hmm. there may be substance abuse or even parental incarceration. More often than not, what we see, the trauma is really rooted in abuse and neglect.
Mm-hmm.
And so every type of abuse that you could potentially think of, sexual, emotional, physical. And even now what we're finding is that more of these young ladies are actually unknowingly, which is so sad, connected to human trafficking, whether they've been solicited or they've actually are participating and don't really realize it.
Mm-hmm.
So these are girls that I like to say, these are not bad girls. These are girls that have had bad things happen to them. The traditional school system is not the place because it doesn't give them enough support. When you're dealing with someone or a particularly young person dealing with trauma, the behaviors can overshadow the real issue. And in a traditional setting, the teachers, the systems, they're not set up to deal with those behaviors. You need quieter spaces. You need smaller spaces. You need dedicated and trained counselors available at any moment to be able to help this young lady deal with that. And that's what we have at PACE.
Isn't it true that a lot of these young ladies that have this kind of background, especially even if they're coming out of the sex trafficking thing, that they feel trapped and they feel that there is no other option for them but to continue?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's all based on what you see and what you know. And if this is your environment, mm-hmm. and if this is all that I know, I don't know anything else. I don't know how to get out. And if this is all that I've seen, what we really see when we're working with the young ladies at PACE, we see generational trauma.
Mm-hmm.
This happened to my mother, or it happened to my sister, or it happened to my aunt, or my father was incarcerated and his father was incarcerated, or my mother had a substance abuse problem, and those. So it's generational. And what I love about the work of PACE, and we work with teenage girls between the ages of 11 and 18, is because not only do we have the ability to work with and support this girl, we're breaking a generational cycle.
Yes.
And we know with a couple of things, and particularly, of course, the spiritual side, how important that is. But even on the practical, if we can really educate a young lady, help her with the basics. And I think we think it's basic, but when you talk to some of these young ladies, it's not. This high school diploma means everything, because for many, they're the first one, again, a generation. So the second we have the ability to educate them, even beyond what they may have seen with their own families or caregivers, we're now changing a total trajectory, because now that becomes the standard. A new standard is created in that whole legacy, which is incredible.
Now, these kids are often coming, as you said, from really rough backgrounds. What are the ages that they, maybe the mean age for a girl at Pace?
Most of our girls are usually between, I'll give a range, between about 14 to 16.
Mm-hmm.
We do have, the youngest we serve is 11, and the eldest girls can stay with us up until their, through their 18th birthday. So the day before they turn 19. When young ladies do come to us, they do come and they stay with us for 36 months. So we're not a live-in, we're not a residential, we are a day program. That's really important, because we want to give the girls the skills to go back into society, and we want them to feel supported in being able to do that.
And clearly this is working.
Yes. Yes, it is. It is. And, you know, I just left the center before coming here, and I was talking to one of the young ladies, and she pulled me aside and she said, "Miss Racine, you weren't here." And in my role, I'm not in the building as much, especially now with things opening up. My job is to do exactly what I'm doing. Tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
My job is to bring resources, and my job is to make sure that, my team has what they need to serve the girls. So a lot of times I'm meeting with donors, I'm doing different interviews, I'm meeting with board members. And so that's what happened. I wasn't there because I was doing that. And I said, "Well, what do you mean I wasn't? What happened?" She said, "You missed it." So what did I miss? She said, "I staged up." Tell me about it. So the stage up process, every girl has the ability to go through our growth and change process, where we recognize and honor every little but big step these girls are making. So there are five different stages in our program. And as they move from stage to stage, you have a huge party.
Yeah.
Huge, huge party. And she said, "You missed it when I staged up to," she's now on the fourth stage. She only has one more to go. And I said, "Oh my gosh, I'm so sad I missed it, but I am so proud of you." Now, the interesting thing about this girl is that when she started, she spoke no words, to the point of where we wondered, you know, are we dealing with selective mutism? You know, are we dealing with maybe some disorders that we're not aware of? She didn't speak to anyone. Her head was down the entire day, and she barely connected and came to school.
Mm-hmm.
Especially during the times that we were virtual, it was pulling teeth getting her to just simply log on to so we could see her face. Fast forward a year later, she's one of the top young ladies in our school. She has totally changed her behavior. She is opening up to adults and even helps us support new girls coming in. But it's her confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Her confidence is through the roof. She has a smile now. She has no problem stating her opinions of what she wants and what she likes and what she dislikes. But she feels comfortable in herself and in her being. That's priceless.
It is. And what do you think was the point of change, the big break for her?
You know, I think it was the consistency. You know, a lot of times, just kids in general, they need to know that the adult is not going to give up on them.
So it wasn't like a major cataclysmic event. It's just, it just took. All of a sudden, you wake up one day and it's safe to talk.
Right. And you realize that these adults really are going to be here for me. The school is not closing. The adults are going to be here for me. We show up the same time, the same way every day. I can trust them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what it boils down to. I mean, isn't that what it boils down to truly with God, where one day you really make a decision of, he's always been there. He's been there the entire time. I can trust him. And Lord knows I'm not saying that we're God. Please, no one misrepresent me.
Well, we all
me.
Know that.
No one misrepresent right. me. But the key is the consistency.
Yeah.
And because of that, because she had a consistent counselor that regardless of if she was going to talk or not, I'm still coming to get you and I'm still coming to talk with you and I'm still going to offer you that opportunity. Eventually, those walls break down and you feel comfortable recognizing this person really does care and I can open up to them.
Now, per se, this is not a church organization or a Christian organization in the sense of being run by a church or anything at all like that. But you do employ the principles of the Bible then inside your home. It's not the center. It's not forbidden at all for these girls to talk about their faith or whatever.
It's not forbidden for them to speak about their faith. And I think that we focus in on character building. And character building is just rooted in good morals and good ethics.
Mm-hmm.
But girls have the ability to, just like in any school, they have the ability to talk about their faith, to talk about what they believe, and to question, which I think is important. I think even in, especially in this day and age, we want our girls to have questions. We want our girls to ask questions. We want them to want to know more. Our job is to be able to make it safe for them to do so.
And do they have, like, you have partners that you may have some of the girls be counseled by? Yeah, if they come in, let's say, drug addicted or...
We do connect with a lot of our local partners, Aspire being one right around the corner, and, you know, different services that the girls may seek out themselves. But the key is I think what really sets us apart is the fact that our team is a very dedicated and passionate team.
Mm-hmm.
And while they all have very different beliefs, as do our girls and their families, very different beliefs and varying different thought processes, one thing that we do all come together on and agree on is the fact that every girl is valuable and we need to honor her experience. And that's really important to us.
So these kids that you said 14 to 16 are kind of, that would be the common age group bracket for young people coming in. What happens to their high school education, let's say, or maybe even their upper middle school if they're younger?
Absolutely. So the beautiful part about PACE is that we have two primary partners. One of our partners is the Department of Juvenile Justice because we do serve as a prevention program for the Department of Juvenile Justice. In other words, a lot of the things that I mentioned that our girls may be carrying with them, that unresolved trauma, those behaviors, if they act out, those behaviors can typically lend itself to behaviors that would lead them to entering the juvenile justice system, which is what we don't want. We don't want more girls arrested. We don't want more girls entering the system.
And whether they know it or not, they don't want to be there either.
They don't want to be there either.
Right.
We do want to break that cycle. And ironically, right now, just in our country overall, we recognize a lot that's happening in terms of prison reform. But what we also know is that girls and women are actually entering into juvenile and adult prison systems at a faster rate than males, which is something that we have to stop.
I would not have thought that.
And it's because they're also entering for lesser offenses. And so, yes, there are more males in our prison systems, but the rate at which girls are entering is actually surpassing the rates of males. So there's a lot of work to be done.
That's a concerning stat for sure.
It's a very concerning stat. The second piece of our partnership, so that's why we have that GJJ component, right? We're doing everything that we can to keep them out of that system and to stop a cycle that may have been created in their family. The second part, a huge partner of ours is actually Orange County Public Schools. So when the girls come in, they continue to matriculate or follow their scheduled classes that they would have had at any other Orange County public high school or middle school. So they're not losing credits. In fact, the way that our program is set up, not only can they get caught up, they actually have the ability to get ahead, which is a huge deal for a lot of our girls when they've had adverse school experiences. The sooner they can complete and move on and move to that next phase of life, whether it be working, whether it be moving out of their home, et cetera, the sooner we see them seeing greater levels of long-term adult success.
You know, these kids that are coming into these kinds of problems at those ages, it's often because they've got those problems happening in their home, their environment, and those become such huge distractions that they pull the kid out of school even and not, or at least not able to do what they could otherwise do.
Yes.
But that safety, that coming into a place where your environment is consistent, it really makes a big difference.
It does. It does. And kudos to our parents, because PACE is a voluntary program. So no one can make a girl or make a parent send their child to PACE. This is all voluntary. So when that parent or caregiver and girl come to the center, they're making a decision together to make a change.
Mm-hmm.
So kudos to that parent that is saying, I need help. I've done what I can do. We don't take over. We become a partner. Our job is to partner with that parent or caregiver, that mom, dad, grandma, auntie, and say, hey, we've got your back too, and we're here to support you. So again, I want to, while there may be things happening in these homes, I do have to say kudos to the parents, because they have made a decision that they are going to stop it in some way, somehow.
What a different message than what we've heard recently coming from some people who would say parents who are involved and want to see changes are domestic terrorists. That's a big change right there.
Huge change.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you have that position. Rosine Johnson is my guest. She's the executive director at the PACE Center for Girls. We'll be back with her for one more segment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike. My guest today is Rosine Johnson. It's so nice to meet her. If you've just tuned in, Rosine was born in Gary, Indiana. She's another Hoosier like I, and then was raised in Michigan. She moved to Florida. God just uses her now at this wonderful home. It's the PACE Center for Girls. It is a voluntary program. They work with a lot of resources, arm in arm here in the community. They deal with kids who are coming in with troubles, coming in from abuse, coming in perhaps even from being a part of this thing that we hear so much about these days, sex trafficking and human trafficking. And I just can't think of anything as a dad of three daughters that breaks my heart more than to hear the story of a young girl that got trapped and maybe tricked into this whole lifestyle. But it's a tough one, isn't it?
It's very, very tough. And our girls are very resilient, though. And when they have the ability to recognize that this is not safe, and when they have the ability to really cope, because a lot of it is that they have to realize they have more power than what they realize.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you don't realize you have as much power as you do until someone comes alongside you and says, hey, I've got you. I can help you do this. So watching our girls navigate that and really come out of these situations stronger and better it's a gift. It really is a true gift.
Now, you know, you talked about 36 months is kind of the term for these girls in there. And they know that, I'm sure, from the get-go. And yet, so I think it's wise that you're really not aiming to create a dependence that is beyond what could be or even would be healthy for the girls to be there. So when they're coming up to the end, what's that like for them?
So the great, great question. Our goal is, you are correct, we want to create independent young women, independent thinkers, independent in their thoughts, independent in their opinions and their voices, so that they can re-enter. And it's not even like they've left society, but when they do go back into their home school, they are more prepared and stronger in who they are to be able to make better decisions. So as a young lady gets ready to what we call a transition, when her transition time mm-hmm. gets ready to occur, there are a lot of activities that take place actually over the first 6 months or the 6 months leading up into that. Everything from specialized visits to their schools. If we know that the girl is getting ready to go back to, let's say, Jones, we'll start opportunities to place her back on campus. We want to be able to do that before her transition, because sometimes for a lot of our girls, in a, the school campus may not have been the safest place for them.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want them to return to a place that hasn't been safe without a safe person.
Right.
So the counselor will go with them. They'll walk through the halls with them, help them reintroduce themselves and reacclimate. And if we, that also gives us a gauge of if we need more time, then we can work with the family and the young lady on having more time before that transition starts.
So do they ever go beyond 36 months?
Sometimes, yes, under mm-hmm. very specific circumstances. Sometimes, yes. And again, it's very, very specific. After that, we also work with the girls internally. And now that we have a new position that we're adding, which is a transition services specialist, that individual will actually host transition groups with the girls, small groups, psychoeducational groups, which is simply just a fancy term of a mix of academic and mental health support services in a group to really help the young lady prepare for her next steps.
Mm-hmm.
It's really designed to be able to help that young lady feel confident in what she's getting ready to do, but also how we can support her in her next steps.
So that's basically like a support group for any other problem or cause.
Correct.
And it makes sense that they need that and would benefit greatly from that. If they've used to have this 24/7 kind of support inside the PACE Center.
Yes.
And now they're out there. So the idea, again, is not to develop a dependent individual, but an independent.
Independent.
One.
Absolutely. And then kind of that last stage is as they get ready to transition back to homeschool or graduation, which is where they are formally graduating. They're getting their high school diploma. We also have a huge celebration. And so and that celebration is always so emotional. It's so beautiful. But it is really marked by the work that the young lady has done to get to the place where she is. So mm-hmm. not only do we have all of our current girls there, we invite the girls' families, but also significant staff members that have been in that girl's life, whether they are currently there or maybe have moved on, we actually invite them back.
That's my next question, to say, do they ever come back once they're out to visit or maybe to serve as a mentor? Or?
They do. And those are some of the happiest moments when you get to see them. They get a chance to come back, and we do stay in touch with them through our transition program. So after a young lady does leave, we actually stay in touch with and track our girls for 3 years. But we have a saying, once a PACE girl, always a PACE girl. So if a young lady calls 7 years later and says, I went to PACE and I need help with creating my resume for this new job, or I need help, I'm getting ready to go into graduate school and I need an outfit for my interview.
Mm-hmm.
We're still there. So, and I've seen it in my 4 years at PACE, there have been girls that I've never met that have been a part of our program that have called and we've been able to help support. And I think that's important because we want to make sure that our girls and their families know we are there for them. You know, after a young lady transitioned and she went back into her home school, not too long later, after we heard that her family, they were involved in a fire where they lost everything. Well, just because she wasn't at PACE anymore didn't mean we didn't help her. We rallied together our board, our community, and we refurnished their whole home.
Wow.
Clothes, furniture, food, everything.
That's wonderful.
Because we want that young lady to continue to know that we're here for her, that we're here to support you and your family. And now she's been able to move forward. She's maintained a steady job, and she's going to school to become a sign language interpreter.
That's wonderful. How is all of this funded?
So again, through our partners, we have three funding sources: the Department of Juvenile Justice, Orange County Public Schools.
Oh, so they're actually one of your financial partners.
They're two of our largest financial partners. The rest of those dollars, and I really kind of counted into thirds, right? So a third of this, a third of that. The other third comes from the community, and that's where our board members and our community really come into play. They help bring in resources to be able to support the girls. So they've been able to assist us with grants with the Orlando Magic Youth Foundation, Walt Disney World, Advent Health are just a few of our main partners, Orlando Health. Many of these groups, I can go on and on and on, and I feel bad because I'm not able to say every single person, but we're grateful for the support, because if we didn't have the support of the community, we couldn't do what we do. All of the services to the girls and families are free. We don't charge them a dime for anything. So the fact that we can continue to do that well over 30 years in this community really is a testament to how our community values our girls.
That's wonderful. How did the pandemic affect you? And are you now, would you say you're out of it, or to what degree of percentage are you back to pre-pandemic years?
You know, so I'll be honest, I don't think we'll ever go back to, I think everyone's waiting to go back to normal. There is no, a new normal has been created.
Okay.
Right. So I don't think we'll ever get back to, I like to use the term BC, before COVID, right? I don't think we'll ever, think we'll ever get to BC again, because there's too much in our world and in our country and in our lives that have changed. What I will say though, is that the pandemic really, from an educational perspective, and I'm in the education industry, that changed the industry forever. And that's why, I mean, we're never going back to normal. It was expected that teachers shift the way that they taught. Everything that they learned, they had to shift in a 24-hour time frame. Mm-hmm. The way that we were taught to teach, we were taught to teach face-to-face. We're not taught to teach via a camera. We're taught to teach face-to-face, human expression, all of that. We're taught to teach large groups in a setting. All of that had to change. And so what I think was the most beautiful thing about it is that, as stressed as everyone was, because it was very stressful, our team, and again, that goes back to that dedication and that calling. PACE is not a job. This is not a job. This is a calling. To do what we're doing, there has to be some level of deeper purpose and calling. And maybe a person may not necessarily know that, and they may not call it that, but it is. And it was that calling, it was that deep calling that allowed our teachers and our team to stay up, shifting a full on face-to-face model to virtual in a matter of days. And our girls struggled a bit, as anyone would expect, but they picked up and they caught on. And what I'm really proud to say about that is that we didn't lose any of our girls. And let me tell you why that's so impactful. When we look at school district data across the country, most districts, they're ranging, averaging anywhere from 30 to 50% of their students have been lost in this pandemic. Lost meaning no record of them, no attendance. They have no clue where these students are.
Mm-hmm.
When everything went virtual, they lost 30 to 50% of their kids. That's significant. That's half of your school, half of your district gone.
From a standpoint of tracking and knowing.
From a standpoint of tracking attendance, these kids aren't showing up. They're not showing up anywhere. They're not showing up face to face. They're not showing up virtually. And a lot of these kids still haven't come back. We don't know where they went. We can presume, right? But the bottom line is that they're gone. We didn't lose any of our kids.
Wow.
100% of our girls remained with us throughout the pandemic and beyond. That is significant to me, and the fact that, and that goes to the way that our program is set up. Those counselors, they were out in cars doing drive-by visits to make sure that our girls were safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole idea of safer at home, it's not always true. Not for our girls. That wasn't always a safe place.
And that's why they're at the PACE in the beginning.
Exactly. So our counselors and teachers were out dropping off supplies, cleaning products, food, technology, books, school supplies, clothes, making sure that our girls had everything that they needed. And I think that was the difference. And what we're seeing now is our enrollment is going up as well, because other parents and other families have heard about what we did and how we cared for our girls. They are now interested in that. And now that we're back face to face fully, we are seeing a different type of young lady present.
Mm-hmm.
And the needs of the girls are greater. The pandemic has been a challenge, particularly on our girls' mental health. And so that's an area that we're also looking to be able to expand with the potential of adding additional therapists to our program.
I only have a couple of minutes left here, but there is a question that you just bring up, the mental health question. How, you know, this is something that is talked about, and in some ways one could think that mental health is something that almost every one of the young people at one time or another, from the talk about it, the expansive amount of talk that they're experiencing. And by that, it's not necessarily even one of the kids that comes from a horrible background or anything like that. But is there a way that some of these kids are going to walk out of being able to be thought of as one with a mental illness?
So I think the best way to kind of qualify that is that mental illness and trauma has no color, no creed, no income requirement or anything like that. It's really difficult for me to focus in on this math problem if I can't figure out where our family's going to get food tonight.
Mm-hmm.
That's mental health.
That's mental health in the definition. And I think that's an important understanding, the difference, because when they use the word mental health, and so many people have this kind of like this one size fits all definition, mm-hmm. for it.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it sound like we're creating a culture where every child practically has mental health issues.
No, and I don't think that's the case. I think that there are children that do have significant issues that are related to, mm-hmm. some of the things that we've discussed.
I think that's a good difference. And thank you for really clarifying that, mm-hmm. for, I think, a lot of people. Give us your website.
Absolutely. PACECenter.org/orange. And you can get right to us.
That's wonderful. My guest, Rosine Johnson, Executive Director for PACE. We wish you the best. And we agree with you. We're praying that we stay face to face and get out of this whole thing, and wish you the very greatest successes in the future with all the girls that are part of the program.
Thank you so much. Thank you for allowing me to be here.
You've got it. And for you, go Spartans.
Yeah, absolutely. Go green, go white.
God bless you. And friends, thanks for being with us. We'll catch you next time.